sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On Sunday, September 9th, I went to New York City to the 11th anniversary program put on by New York City 9/11 truthers called How the World Changed Since 9/11. Some of the speakers were architect Richard Gage, the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, Barbara Honegger, the author of October Surprise, who titled her speech, Behind the Smoke Curtain, The Pentagon Attacked Itself on 9/11. Then there was Robert Griffin, who called his speech, 9/11, Shock and Awe, The Psychology Factor. And then there was Joe Calhoun, who spoke about the 1993 World Trade Center attack, CIA operatives, and the FBI. Then Susan Lindauer, who will be coming here on October 4th, gave a speech there called Advanced Knowledge of 9/11, The Decision to Destroy Peace. And then two whistleblowers, Anthony Schaefer and Julia Davis, did a presentation called Whistleblowers Under Attack. And they talked about a new film that's coming out. And then Father Frank Morales talked about 9/11 and the militarization of America. And then they ended the day having a panel discussion addressing the subject of creating a culture of truth, what action looks like. So over the next few weeks, I'll be sharing some of these presentations with you. And today you're going to hear the introductory speech by longtime truth activist and one of the organizers of this event, Les Jamieson. And here he is.
Third annual symposium of How the World Changed, a symposium of critical thinkers brought together to commemorate the 11th anniversary of 9/11. It's hard to imagine, right? But so many of us have been intent for so many of these years to follow the evidence, follow the research, wherever it may lead. And that will continue. And with 11 years of alternative research, it's just so clear that the unfolding of the agenda articulated by the Project for New American Century, which required a new Pearl Harbor, has come to fruition. We can see it milestone by milestone, starting right from the passage of the Patriot Act 6 weeks after 9/11, invasion of Iraq, successively right on to the present day with a recent passage of the National Defense Authorization Act, and of course, the invasions throughout the Middle East.
This is how Wikipedia describes the Project for a New American Century. The Project for a New American Century, PNAC, was an American think tank based in Washington, D.C. that lasted from 1997 to 2006. It was co-founded as a nonprofit educational organization by William Crystal and Robert Kagan. The PNAC's stated goal was to promote American global leadership. Fundamental to the PNAC was the view that American leadership is both good for America and good for the world, and support for a Reaganite policy of military strength and moral clarity. The PNAC exerted influence on high-level U.S. government officials in the administration of U.S. President George W. Bush and affected the Bush administration's development of military and foreign policy, especially involving national security and the Iraq War. And not only, and these are my words now, but not only did it affect the Bush administration, many of them were members of the Bush administration. Here are just some of the people associated with PNAC. William Crystal, he was the co-founder and chairman, Robert Kagan, a co-founder, and some other signatories, Elliot Abrams, Gary Bauer, Donald Kagan, Zalmay Khalilzad, William Bennett, Jeb Bush, Dick Cheney, Elliot Cohen, Midge Dechter, Steve Forbes, Aaron Friedberg, Francis Fukuyama, Frank Gaffney, Scooter Libby, Norman Potteritz, Dan Quayle, Peter Rodman, Stephen Roseman, Henry Rowan, Donald Rumsfeld, Vin Weber, George Weigel, Paul Wolfowitz, just to mention a few. And now back to Les Jamieson.
And looking back at the history of these milestones, the sequence, it is easier and clearer than ever to connect the dots. wouldn't you say? And also, I think those of us in the alternative research community can now very confidently say that what has been called conspiracy theory has become conspiracy fact. Now, also with a growing recognition by the public that things are seriously wrong in this country, the potential exists to create an even wider base, the public, to take an objective look at 9/11 and understand it for what it truly is. And for many people, getting to that place when they're ready to understand 9/11, as well as the implications, is just a matter of timing. Just a matter of timing. So after 11 years, we propose that society should be ready to transition from cognitive dissonance to a culture of truth. And that's what this conference is really about. Only by doing so can we obtain justice on a comprehensive level for all of the various social, economic, and environmental movements. And this year, as we all know, has seen the rise of the Occupy movement. Now, due to the work of this movement, there is a widespread awareness of the 99% versus the 1% and the great disparity economically, and socially, and otherwise. There's a wider awareness of the 99% to a great degree, large percentage of people sliding into poverty, while there's the consolidation of wealth and concentration of wealth even at more intense levels. And the Occupy movement has done a good job at galvanizing protest movements against crimes of the Wall Street bankers, environmental issues, and labor issues. However, even with the growing numbers of people across the country, let's face it, the security state has brutally clamped down on them, using weapons on unarmed citizens, wiping out encampments, making many hundreds of arrests, while we've yet to see even one arrest of the true perpetrators go to jail. Now it's time for the Occupy movement and the progressive movement at large to become aware of the fact that if they want to have an effect on the military, industrial, congressional complex, they must understand 9/11 and join those of us who have demanded truth and justice. It's time to realize that there will not be a revolution or an evolution until masses of people become informed and inform others about who really controls power in this country and sees the reality that treason has been committed, not only on the American people, but against the Constitution. So it's time to understand 9/11 as the false flag operation it was and put a stop to all future false flag operations. It's time to evolve into a culture of truth that demands one standard of law and demands government that represents the people rather than the ruthless military agenda designed to do the bidding of a powerful transnational corporatocracy. This is what the third annual symposium is about, how the world changed after 9/11, which we hope and we work for the day that these points and these issues will be understood by the masses, which is so necessary for the real change that's necessary to occur. And with the great roster of speakers that we have today, we'll have even a further ability to advance this cause, to a further enlarging of people's understanding of how the political and military agendas really work to shape our reality. It's very important in this time to remind ourselves of the agenda for Project for New American Century, which again required a new Pearl Harbor to advance their military agenda of, well, transforming our military power and setting up a scenario where not even any other country could rival the U.S. and just to be the one dominant superpower no matter what. The agenda was full-spectrum domination. Shortly after 9/11, we need to be reminded that General Wesley Clark visited the Pentagon, and he was told by an officer that he knew that was working within the Bush administration at the time that there were plans to go to war against Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Iran, and of course Afghanistan. And he was quite shocked when he heard this. And 11 years later, we look at the U.S. and NATO war actions, and that plan that he learned of in the days after 9/11 is clearly visible.
Here's General Wesley Clark in a 2007 speech discussing what I would now call the 9/11 wars.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who used to work for me, and one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, no, he says, "We've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They've just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, today. And he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
And now back to Les Jamison.
So with this focus, the symposium will highlight the disappearance of civil liberties, rise of the homeland security state, the crippling financial costs, which have diverted trillions of dollars from domestic needs to the war machine. And also, at this point, it's very necessary to call upon experts in psychology who can help explain the mindset of the public, because, as we know, so much of the public is yet to come to terms and yet to reach the point at which they can understand 9/11 instead of having access to and understanding and absorbing the alternative research. They instantly believe what they see on TV in the major media, and that's all they're getting. So many of us have encountered these people through our own lives and within our own families and friends and communities who have yet to receive this information and understand it. And we need to have a better understanding of the psychological and emotional barriers. And through the work of Richard Gage, one of our featured speakers here, and in his film, 9/11 Experts Speak Out, this psychology factor is included, and we'll be hearing from one of his featured guests in that area. But yet we're going to maintain our course, because I think we all know intuitively here that the agenda that we have seen brought forth as a result of 9/11, again, although the wars of conquest abroad and the disappearance of civil liberties at home, with ever-tightening restrictions on our civil liberties, which are constitutionally guaranteed, what we've seen in terms of the repression of protests and dissent here, what is called for is continued efforts in the education of the masses of 9/11, on the issues of 9/11, so that we can create a culture that sees the agenda of how governments and corporations and the military establishment functions. And only with that informed public will we have the opportunity to turn back the tide. So as we continue on this path forward, there's an example. I'd like to bring up a lady who has just come to this information recently, just to give an example that our efforts, our continued efforts, are very valuable. And this young lady, I'll ask up to the stage here. Her name's Laura. And she'll give a little description of what enabled her to understand the real agenda behind 9/11. Please come up, Laura.
Her name is Laura, and 6 months ago, I hadn't heard anything about the towers coming down by controlled demolition. And I was upset and confused as to why I had never heard about this on mainstream media. And when I spoke to other people in the 9/11 truth movement, they said they won't report on this. And I didn't believe them. So I called 60 Minutes and I spoke to a senior producer and I said, "Have you heard about the evidence for controlled demolition at the World Trade Center?" And he said, "No, I haven't. And would you be willing to look at some evidence about this? I have a 4-minute trailer I can send you." And he said, "Sure, I'll look at it." So a week later I called him back and said, "Did you have a chance to look at it?" "Oh yes, I looked at it. And what did you think?" And I said, well, he said, "Well, it's really not our kind of thing. And I said, what do you mean it's not your kind of thing? You guys are investigative reporters. That's what you do. It's exactly what you do. And he said, well, it's really just not our kind of thing. So, and he said, you know, and I said, what do you mean it's not your kind of thing? He said, it's too far out there. So what you're trying to tell me is 1,700 architects and engineers and a National Medal of Science winner calling for a new investigation is not worthy of your reporting on it? He said, well, that's not really what I'm saying. And I said, so you're telling me that 1,700 architects and engineers and a National Medal of Science winner are all conspiracy theorists? He said, well, I'm not really saying that, but you have your answer. So it was clear, you know, he was giving me the brush off. And so I didn't stop there. I went to PBS, and I figured, certain that the NewsHour will report on this. Jim Lehrer will report on this. I know he will. So I called the NewsHour, and I spoke to, there are no producers available, but I spoke to the office manager, who was also a reporter, and she'd been there for 15 years, and she said to me, you know, I've been trying to get this story on the air for 11 years. They will not report on it. Not only that, the national media is actively censoring this information. So I was stunned, and I was sick to my stomach that I finally got that this information is being actively censored. So when I heard about this information, and like I said, it's 6 months ago, and most of the summer I've spent traveling around with Richard Gage, helping him in his presentations a bit. And what I want to say to you is, when I first got into the 9/11 truth movement, people were saying, oh, people who don't know about this, or who aren't involved in this, don't care, or their minds are closed to this information. So what I want to say to you is, don't give up on people like me, who just don't know yet. And there are a lot of us.
There is one bright light here, in that very recently, the film by architects and engineers, 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out, was aired on PBS in Colorado. So that's creating some buzz, I would say. And Richard Gage will tell us a little bit more about that later. The format of our conference today, our symposium, is in three sections. One is coming up here, which is what the alternative research reveals, a recap. And we'll have three presentations on the research, just so that people realize that 11 years of evidence has really been well put together and is just unmistakable. And like I said, that this can no longer be seriously be called conspiracy theory. There's just too much fact, too much science, and that's a very, very important accomplishment that must be realized. Our second section will be looking into the 11 years of consequences, which is also unmistakable, and I think when you look at the 11 years of consequences of 9/11, anybody who gets that should realize, you know, you better take a serious look. And then section three, we'll have a panel where we'll have the speakers discussing steps forward, their thoughts and ideas on what it'll take to create the culture of truth, what action really looks like. And now I would like to, this is called the research model, deconstructing the evidence. And in my years of research, which began actually 2 months after 9/11, it's come to mind that there's like five categories, I'd say, that it's helpful to break it all down into. Five categories. One would be the geopolitics of 9/11. Next would be procedural anomalies. Next would be physical evidence. The next would be false flags in historical context. And then the fifth one would be the cover-up, okay? So those are five categories that all who are coming to this research hopefully can break things down to have a kind of a structured and organized understanding of 9/11. For instance, the geopolitics, and there was a film, actually the first documentary of 9/11 by Michael Rupert called Truth and Lies of 9/11. Is all about, it's basically 3 hours of geopolitics. It went into the agenda by Project for American Century, went into the research into the Afghan pipeline, where there was a competition between a Brazilian company called Brightus and Unocal to get the contract to build a pipeline in Afghanistan that would pipe the oil and natural gas from the Caspian Sea region through Pakistan, Afghanistan, and then right to the Indian Ocean. That was a huge, huge economic prize there that was sought after. By the way, this was depicted in the book by Zbigniew Brzezinski called The Grand Chessboard. He lays it out. And whoever got access to these natural resources, whether it was going to be the U.S., Russia, or China, or any others, would have a huge advantage against any other countries in the world, especially in the case of war, because whoever has access to oil usually wins. So that was very much sought after, what he called prize, the grand prize. Also, Michael Rupert in this film talked about the drug trade as possible motive in that, of course, Afghanistan is known to be a source of opium, poppies, right, and heroin, and the banks depend on billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of liquid cash that they can funnel through their system. According to Michael Rupert, who knows quite a bit about the drug trade and illicit trafficking, including by sources within the CIA, which he had exposed, the banks depend on this laundering of drug money. And of course, geopolitically was the agenda by military forces within the U.S. to create full spectrum dominance. So there's a little bit on the geopolitics of 9/11. Procedural anomalies is another category. There were years of warnings, foreknowledge, from 11 foreign governments. There was obstruction of information coming through by FBI field agents such as Colleen Rowley. Harry Sammet literally wrote 71 memos to FBI headquarters. Every one of them was suppressed. One of them was even altered. How about the put options on American United Airlines, betting that those stocks would fall in price? The August 6th PDB, the Presidential Daily Briefing, and the report by Robert Susskind, Pulitzer Prize journalist, saying that the CIA agent who delivered the August 6th PDB to George Bush, who was on vacation at the ranch there in Texas, delivered the briefing and then was told by George W. Bush, okay, now you've covered your ass. How about the fact that there were people in Saudi Arabia who were easily obtaining visas without having to prove their identity? And there were people who were on do not fly lists who easily got on airplanes. How about Bush in the schoolroom that morning when Andy Card came up to him and whispered something in his ear, and then for the next 20 minutes he sat there. Total violation of protocol, because prior to being in the school that morning, he was told that planes had been hijacked and there was something seriously going on here in the skies. Then there were the war games that morning, as many as 25, according to Webster Tarkley, that were running drills exactly like what actually transpired that morning, with simulations of hijackings of planes and attacks on buildings, attacks on the Pentagon. And these war games all served to camouflage what was going on and confuse our air defense. And of course, our air defense was basically missing in action until far too late that morning. And that was unprecedented violation of protocol. The evacuation of bin Laden family members in the days after 9/11, when no one else was allowed to fly. And you know what's interesting is that I've seen many people come to the understanding or the questioning of 9/11 in many different ways. Some people, it's the put options. And when they hear about the put options, they say, you know what? Yeah, there's something wrong here. For some people, the collapse of those buildings, they look at that and say, you know, no way that could happen. For some people, it's Building 7. Wasn't hit by a plane, came down free fall into its own footprint. I get it. No way that could happen by simple office fires alone. For other people, it's the evacuation of the bin Laden family members saying, no, I get it. That shouldn't have happened. Some people, it was the passport that was found in the rubble, the magic passport. So this is, I think, very, very intriguing. You never know what it is that will trigger people in terms of realizing the anomalies and the deception about 9/11. The hijackers, the supposed hijackers. How about the fact that within 24 hours, well, actually, within 1 hour, they had bin Laden's face all over TV. How could that be? He was identified, basically blamed, convicted, and tried within 1 hour. Then within 24 hours, they had 19 hijackers' faces all over TV. And I know a journalist who is fairly prominent, she's had articles published in some national magazines and newspapers, told me that there's no way that could have been done within 24 hours, that it would normally take several weeks to identify these people and verify their identity. Weeks. So there we go. Right away, within the first 24 hours, there were definite signs that a grand deception and orchestration was underway. And then the research by David Ray Griffin, in which he went into the behavior of these 19, where they were living around the country, not trying to disguise their identity, going to Las Vegas, going to strip bars, drinking, doing anything other than what devout Muslims would behave like. Their names were missing from the travel manifest. Definitely procedural anomalies. Also, there's no airport video of them. The one that was shown of Mohammed Atta on TV, guess what? That was from Portland, Maine. That was not from Logan Airport. And many more. These are just a few of the procedural anomalies, folks, that point to the fact that the story that we were told is quite preposterous. The insurance claims by Larry Silverstein, another procedural anomaly that the insurance companies, why didn't they really truly investigate all these issues? Because they wound up having to pay enough billions of dollars to Larry Silverstein, who then reported in a Nova special, talked to the fire chief, and there was such a loss of life, and we decided to pull it. And of course, there is the physical evidence, which so the collapse of the two World Trade Center towers, where just look at the video and you see very clearly the pulverization, the disintegration of the tops of the buildings and the ejection of huge girders weighing many, many tons, 600 feet across the highway, and much more, which will be covered in an upcoming presentation here in a little while by Richard Gage, and of course is very, very well covered in his documentaries, Blueprint for Truth, and of course, Experts Speak Out.
And again, you were just listening to Les Jamison at the How the World Changed Since 9/11 event in New York City on September 9th. Tune in next week to hear the second part of that speech. Around the anniversary of 9/11, when the corporate media puts 9/11 in the news again, but of course never mentions the 1,700-plus architects and engineers who say the official story is impossible, it defies the laws of physics, I start to get cognitive dissonance. Like, I know we're being lied to, but it boggles the mind to see how faithful the many media outlets are to the lies of the official story. I mean, the alternative evidence is everywhere. It's full of scientific evidence, facts, disputing the official story. If I can find it pretty easily, I'm sure that these reporters who are trained to do research could find it if they wanted to. So anyway, I need to be around people who get 9/11 truth, who get that Osama bin Laden wasn't even wanted by the FBI or the Justice Department for 9/11. I need to be around people who get that the war on terror is a hoax. So that's why I went to New York this past Sunday. I hope you enjoy hearing the speeches from the event. And now I want to tell you a little bit about an event coming up. Author and CIA whistleblower Susan Lindauer will be speaking in the Wild Auditorium at the University of Hartford on Thursday, October 4th at 7 p.m. Please stay tuned for more details on that in future broadcasts. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.